This is our practice of responsibility and accountability. We dedicate our time together this morning to all those who are suffering. May we remember that our suffering and our well-being are shared. We acknowledge the Dakota and Anishinaabe peoples on whose traditional, ancestral, and contemporary lands Clouds and Water is an uninvited guest. For those of us who are not indigenous to these lands, may we commit to curiosity and engagement with the lives, justice movements, and sovereignty of the Native nations of this territory and beyond. We offer deep gratitude to our Indian, Chinese, and Japanese spiritual ancestors and contemporaries for all they have given us and for the chance to be here today. May we practice cultural humility. We recognize the Black community and the decimation of the historic Rondo neighborhood where we are, in which we practice. May we stand side by side in community care. We are all connected. May we work together for the liberation of all beings. So I'm particularly thinking of the Black community today, but also the community as a whole, since this is the fifth anniversary of the death of George Floyd. And I probably don't need to remind anyone here of that event. We're going to be having a short ceremony after this talk to remember the life of George Floyd, and I guess to practice mindfulness about the historic event of his death and reflect on what that means to us. So this talk will be a little bit shorter than usual, so that we can do that. And since I was reminded of that yesterday, I've really been reflecting on how unsettled, to use a mild word, those times are. Do you remember? Yeah. Maybe not everybody had the experience, but I think it was a pretty broad experience. This was in the middle of the pandemic. These felt like very uncertain, chancy times. And personally, I'll speak personally, but I think many of us may be feeling a similar vibe today with what's going on with the current administration. I really struggled with this on the car ride up here from Northfield, what to say about this, and I decided I'm not going to even attempt to repeat I'm not going to talk about what's going on today. I think everyone here more or less probably knows that in great measure, so that's not necessary. What I would like to connect my talk to today is hopefully a way that we can practice with that. The question comes up in Buddhism, is there anything, the question comes up in life, is there anything that we can rely on in this world? Another way of phrasing that same question might be, how do we keep ourselves spiritually together? Is there a way to keep ourselves together kind of spiritually in what are very troubling, I would say, continually challenging times. And Buddhism basically says yes, there is something that we can rely on. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that today, although originally my talk was going to be a little bit more abstract. I think it does connect to our actual practice in these times. So the title of this talk is, I'm going to switch to my notes at this point. The title of this talk is The Origin of the Way. Okay. This is actually part of the very first line of Fukan Zazengi, get into what Fukan's Zengi is in a moment. But it may be a translation that you haven't heard before. And very briefly, if there's something that we can rely on, perhaps you could say it's this origin of the way. And our own sincere practice realization, ongoing practice realization of this origin of the way. If we really wanted to cut to the chase here and do like a 2-minute Dharma talk, that might be it, in my opinion. But I have some more details for you. Because amongst other things, we need to unpack a little bit what this word the way means. And that's going to be kind of the primary topic for me this morning. So before I get into Fukan's Zengi, and I really debated whether to do this because the talk is short, but I think I'm going to do it. It all kind of ties together. I'm going to bring up a case from the Blue Cliff Record that we were, that came up yesterday in the Zen Studies group. Blue Cliff Record is an ancient traditional collection of koans, teaching stories from the golden age of Zen in China, more or less. And this is a bit of a risk kind of for setting up this talk because unless you are a very unique individual who has done some specialized work, this is probably going to sound like gibberish to you. But I'm going to ask you to just walk with me for a minute. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I just want to bring up a couple of key terms and connect to a more basic point, okay? So bear with me for a moment here. This is the 51st case in the Blue Cliff Record, Su Feng's What Is It? And here's the case. When Su Feng was living in a hut, there were two monks who came to pay their respects. Seeing them coming, Su Feng pushed open the door of the hut with his hand, popped out, and said, "What is it?" One of the monks also said, in response, "What is it?" Su Feng lowered his head and went back inside the hut. Okay, there's part one of the Zen story for you. Later, the same monk came to Yen To. Su Feng and Yen To are big name teachers of the time, okay? Yen To asked, "Where are you coming from?" The monk said, "I've come from Lingnan." To said, "Did you ever go to Su Feng?" The monk said, "I went there." To said, "What did he have to say?" The monk said, "He said nothing. He lowered his head and went back inside the hut." I'm reading this wrong. To said, "What did he have to say?" The monk recounted the preceding story. Okay. To repeated, "What did he say?" The monk said, "He said nothing." He lowered his head and went back inside the hut. To said, "Alas, it's too bad I didn't tell him the last word before. If I had told him, no one on earth could cope with old Su." See, this is the part that I'm imagining probably sounds like gibberish to you. Am I spot on there? Or? Anyway, at the end of the summer, the monk again brought up the preceding story to ask for instruction. To said, "Why didn't you ask earlier?" The monk said, "I didn't dare to be casual." To said, "Although Su Feng is born of the same lineage as me, he doesn't die in the same lineage as me. If you want to know the last word, just this is it. Just this is it." So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but there's a couple key phrases that come up. One is, "What is it?" Okay. Another one is so-called the last word. Turns out these two things mean basically the same thing. And I would say that they mean pretty much the same thing as the origin of the way. which we're going to get into. All right. But if you don't like that, and I can understand why you wouldn't at this point, perhaps the last few words of this case might have more immediate resonance for us. Just this is it. Does that have any resonance for you?
Yeah.
Just where we are, right here and now, paying attention. Okay. Now, the real reason why I mention this comes up in the commentary in this case, a very short line that says, later, due to a purge, Yen To became a ferryman by the shores of Lake Ochu. So one may wonder, like, why is Su Feng living in a hut? And why is Yen To later a ferryman? The answer is because there was a political purge happening in China at the time. This is kind of like just mentioned in an offhand way in the commentary of this case because this happened a lot. And Katakiri Roshi, in his commentary, he reflects on this, and I find it inspiring. The point is, there were points in time where these monks had to essentially flee for their lives, or at least for their safety. They had to leave the monastery, and they had to pretend to be non-monks for a while. But the interesting thing is, they still did the same practice. They carried on their practice even though they lived in a hut, even though they were a ferryman. And people still came to see them, quietly, perhaps on the down low. And then, when the situation changed later, when peace returned, they could come back to the monastery and continue their practice there. So, to me, that's a historical fact that has some resonance in these times. I find that somewhat inspiring because there was a practice that they did, that they carried on. Now, the topic, hopefully, of this talk today is what is that practice? Is it exchanging cryptic phrases that about 1,000 years later will baffle us here at Krausenbacher Zen Center? I would say not. Is it wearing fancy clothes and chanting particular sutras? Well, that might be involved. But again, I would personally say that's not the core point. So what is it? Or is it, to coin a phrase, what is the core point? So here I want to get into Fukan Zazengi. And because practice back then was the same as what Dogen talks about in Fukan Zazengi, I would say. And it's the same thing that often we're talking about today. Are we okay?
Yeah, I'm just going to get them the link to the copy of the...
Mm-hmm. Okay. How are we for time? Okay, we got 20 minutes, so we need to book a little bit. Fukan Zazengi, very briefly, is the first thing that Zen Master Dogen wrote. Dogen is the founder of Soto Zen Buddhism in Japan. I'm not going to tell you the story because we don't really have time. It's a fascinating story, though. And it's the most basic, or certainly among the most basic practice instructions in our tradition. We chant it every evening during sesshins or silent meditation retreats. So what I'd like to do, which is going to take a little more time even, but I still want to do it, is actually recite Fukan Zazengi. I need a copy. Fuku, could you hand me that chant book? It's on page 17. And this is something we reflect on a lot. So, you know, it may not all make sense to you, but it might be helpful to listen to it and take it in. And then what I'm actually going to be talking about, probably briefly at this point, is like the very first line. Last time I spent a lot of time talking about the second line, the meaning of practice realization. I gave a talk about a month ago. You can go back and look at it online. That talk talked a lot about what practice realization means. And it doesn't mean the same thing as enlightenment. an enlightenment experience, and it doesn't mean the same thing as an insight. What it means is very interesting. But then I realized, just like last night, oh, there's something to talk about in the first line. What is the way? So that's what I want to get into. But really, the whole piece reflects that. So let's recite it together. Fukan Zazenki. The way is originally
perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent on practice and realization? The truth is sufficient. What need is there for such effort? Indeed, the whole body is free from dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean?
It is never apart from this very place.
What is the use of traveling around to practice? And yet, if there is a hair's breadth deviation, it is like the gap between heaven and earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. Suppose you are confident in your understanding and rich in enlightenment, gaining the wisdom that knows at a glance, attaining the way and clarifying the mind, arousing an aspiration to reach for the heavens. You are playing in the entrance way, but you are still short of the vital path of emancipation. Consider the Buddha. Although he was wise at birth, the traces of his 6 years of upright sitting can yet be seen. As for Bodhidharma, although he had received the mind seal, his 9 years of facing a wall is celebrated still. If even the ancient sages were like this, how can we today dispense with wholehearted practice? Therefore, put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases, and learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will manifest. If you want to realize such, get to work on such right now. For practicing Zen, a quiet room is suitable. Eat and drink moderately. Put aside all involvements and suspend all affairs. Do not think good or bad. Do not judge true or false. Give up the operations of mind, intellect, and consciousness. Stop measuring with thoughts, ideas, and views. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. How could that be limited to sitting or lying down? At your sitting place, spread out a thick mat and put a cushion on it. Sit either in the full lotus or half lotus position. In the full lotus position, first place your right foot on your left thigh, then your left foot on your right thigh. In the half lotus, simply put your left foot on your right thigh. Tie your robes loosely and arrange them neatly. Then place your right hand on your left leg and your left hand on your right palm, thumb tips slightly touching. Straighten your body and sit upright, leaning neither left nor right, neither forward nor backward. Align your ears with your shoulders and your nose with your navel. Rest the tip of your tongue against the front of the roof of your mouth, with teeth together and lips shut. Always keep your eyes open and breathe softly through your nose. Once you have adjusted your posture, take a breath and exhale fully. Rock your body right and left and settle into steady, immovable sitting. Think of not thinking. Not thinking. What kind of thinking is that? Non-thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. The Zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is the koan realized. Traps and snares can never reach it. If you grasp the point, you are like a dragon gaining the water, like a tiger taking to the mountains. For you must know that the true Dharma appears of itself, so that from the start, dullness and distraction are struck aside. When you arise from sitting, move slowly and quietly, calmly and deliberately. Do not rise suddenly or abruptly. In surveying the past, we find that transcendence of both mundane and sacred, and dying while either sitting or standing, have all depended entirely on the power of Zazen. In addition, triggering awakening with a finger, a banner, a needle, or a mallet, and effecting realization with a whisk, a fist, a staff, or a shout.
These cannot be understood through
intuitive thinking, much less can they be known through the practice of supernatural power.
They must
represent conduct beyond seeing and hearing. Are they not a standard prior to knowledge and views? This being the case, intelligence or lack of it is not an issue. Make no distinction between the dull and the sharp-witted. If you concentrate your efforts single-mindedly, that in itself is wholeheartedly engaging the way. Practice realization is naturally undefiled. Going forward is, after all, an everyday affair. In general, in our world and others, in both India and China, all equally hold the Buddha seal. While each lineage expresses its own style, they are all simply devoted to sitting, totally blocked in resolute stability. Although they say that there are 10,000 distinctions and 1,000 variations, they just wholeheartedly engage the way in Zazen. Why leave behind the seat in your own home to wander in vain through the dusty realms of other lands? If you make one misstep, you stumble past what is directly in front of you. You have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Do not pass your days and nights in vain. You are taking care of the essential activity of the Buddha way. Who would take wasteful delight in the spark from a flintstone? Besides, form and substance are like the dew on the grass, the fortunes of life like a dart of lightning, emptied in an instant, vanished in a flash. Please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not doubt the true dragon. Devote your energies to the way of direct pointing at the real. Revere the one who has gone beyond learning and is free from effort. Accord with the enlightenment of all the Buddhas. Succeed to the samadhi of all the ancestors. Continue to live in such a way, and you will be such a person. Open of itself, and you may enjoy it freely.
So that's Bhutan Zazenki, or at least one English translation of Bhutan Zazenki. And as I said, last time I talked quite a bit about the second line. Let me come back to it here. Which is, so the first two lines are, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading, according to this translation. How could it be contingent on practice and realization? And what I want to talk about briefly is this first line, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. Katagiri Roshi, and if you're interested in...
The video isn't on.
I don't control the video.
Yeah. I'm not sure what you're asking, Sosa.
The video, please
the
turn
camera.
The camera on. Please turn the camera on.
Oh my God.
So they can see Kikon.
No one has said anything at home that's really interesting.
And yet everyone's still there.
It probably happened when you did the screen share.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, okay. All right, so we're back. Hello.
If they don't tell me, I don't know.
We're back, and we have a couple minutes. All right. So I've been studying this quite a bit recently. If you're interested in studying Fukan Zazengi seriously, on my website, katagiritranscripts.net, there is now a thing called Annotated Fukan Zazengi in the resources section, where it's a new document where I'm going through, and this is a work in progress, I'm going through Fukan Zazengi line by line, more or less, and linking to the many various places where Katagiri Roshi, the founder of our tradition here in the Twin Cities, talks about it. I'm finding this very helpful, and I'm learning lots of new things myself. So very briefly, I want to read something that may blow your mind or not about this first line, "The way is originally perfect and all-pervading." First of all, Katagiri Roshi translates this line as "the origin of the way is perfect and all-pervading." Sounds a little bit different, and probably is different. So we have a few minutes, let's briefly hear what Katagiri Roshi says about the way. And it turns out, probably the best place to start with this is in a series called Principles of Practice, which is actually on, Gakudo Yojinshu, another piece by Dogen, so usually translated as Points to Watch in Buddhist Practice. This is another very fundamental introductory kind of piece by Dogen, and actually references Fukan Zazengi a lot. So here's the very beginning, okay? So just listen to this. It's the very beginning of Principles of Practice, Talk 1. Oh, and I'm going to talk about two things, actually. The first one is the way. The second one is what we mean by practicing Zen, which is actually a translation of the word sanzen, which goes into a little bit more depth than just practicing the way. Okay, Katagiri Roshi says, "I would like to talk about the key point of the practice during this session in terms of three points, bodhi, mind, faith, and direct transmission of teaching. Before we go into these three issues, today I would like to talk about the purpose of the practice generally. Why we have to practice? What is the purpose of the practice? What is the purpose of spiritual life? In Gakudo Yojinshu, Points to Watch in Buddhist Practice, in this particular translation, first of all, Dogen Zenji says, the study of the way through the practice of Zazen is of vital importance. Katagiri Roshi says, I think I have to say the same sentence in a different way. Okay, so let me clarify what this means. Katagiri Roshi is politely offering a correction to this translation. This happens a lot. Katagiri Roshi's translation is Sanzen Gakudo is the great matter of one's whole life. Okay, so it's not of vital importance. It's the great matter of one's whole life. Let's see, is he going to explain? Yes, he is. I think the great matter of one's whole life is not only in Dogen's works. You will see this teaching in various Buddhist textbooks. For instance, in the Saddharma Pundarika Sutra, that's the Lotus Sutra, Chapter 2, Skillfulness. I think it says that the advent of Buddha Shakyamuni is due to seeing the causes and conditions of the great matter. This is the same meaning as Dogen mentions here. Sanzen Gakudo is translated according to this book as the study of the way through the practice of Zazen. That Sanzen Gakudo is the great matter of one's whole life. But Gakudo means to learn or to study the way. Gaku means to learn or to study. Do is the way. Okay, I should clarify at this point. This Do is the same as Tao. Okay, if you're familiar with Taoism, it's the same Tao. In Japanese, it comes out as Do. Okay, Dogen's name, Dogen, literally means way origin. I think the deal is that when Buddhism arrived in China, it used the language that was there. Okay, so I think the meaning of the Tao in Taoism and the meaning of Do or Tao in Buddhism is very very close, very similar, but there may be some differences to account for as well. So it is the same meaning. Gakudo, okay, we read that. The way, okay, here we go. The way, Dao, Do, the way, means the universal life beyond the conscious or unconscious worlds. This is the way where all beings exist in peace, in harmony, prior to the germination of any subtle ideas. This is the way. All sentient beings exist in the realm of the way. That is called universal life. This life is open not only to human beings or living beings, but also to inanimate beings, pebbles, water, etc. So Gakudo is to study universal life beyond conscious and unconscious worlds. This is Gakudo. Sanzen, okay, now here we go with Sanzen. Do we have a minute? Barely. Sanzen, which is translated as practicing Zen, is to surrender one's body and mind to Zen, or tranquility. Zen sometimes means samadhi, one-pointedness. Sometimes it is translated as tranquility. Sometimes it is translated as meditation. But anyway, san means to surrender oneself to. To surrender or to visit or to be present, to go toward. This is san. So san zen means to surrender one's life to zen or tranquility. Now, what does tranquility mean? That's the interesting question. Zen or tranquility means dimension of being in which there is no individual consciousness, so-called consciousness or unconsciousness. So not any subtle signs of ideas, conscious world or unconscious world. And we're almost out of time, so I think I'm going to have to summarize. But there, he goes on to explain the word tranquility, which is jakujo in Japanese. And there's two aspects of it. I'm going to make this really short. One is what we might normally think of as tranquility, silence. But within that silence, there are all the facets of our experience, okay? It's later compared to something called Hachimen Reiro, which it's a little interesting, the English that he uses, but you can think of it as like a jewel ball with like many facets. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's perfectly still and tranquil, and yet at the same time, it's reflecting all the different facets of life as it is, whether that's you getting up in the morning, having breakfast, or the ceremony we're about to do, commemorating the life of George Floyd. And briefly, this is our practice. Getting back to where we started out with what is it, in the last word, this is what is it is pointing at, I would say. Because what it is big, beyond our concepts of it. Okay, our concepts don't get there, so eventually we're left with something like, what is it? And they're using this as kind of a greeting. In this case, what is it? What is it? But then what is it really? That's what we get to explore in this practice, I would say. Okay. And so we're about to chant the Heart Sutra, so briefly I want to mention this is related to the Heart Sutra. The Heart Sutra, you'll hear the Heart Sutra in a moment. It's like, okay, it's not this, it's not that. No eyes, no ears, no nose, nothing. Okay, we're completely negating Buddhist teaching. This is getting back to what is it? Okay, this is saying like, what is it really, in my opinion? Okay, so this is what we're doing in this ceremony, so that we can reflect on the big scale of life. Okay, and it's not ideas. That's a good place to start, but it's what we might today call an embodied practice. It's paying attention, and we can have glimpses of insight into this, but it's really more about practicing in an ongoing way. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So that's about what I have time for today. Yeah. I guess we'll leave it at that.